You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 14th of June 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com today because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing?
Yes, I'm doing okay. It's amazing how fast the week comes around, the Friday comes around. I've been working a bit on what I think will be the final episode of Secret Masonic. I just don't know where to upload it yet because BitTube is playing silly devils. So
the week flies past, the year flies past. You know, it's Midsummer's Eve next Friday.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's so quick.
Middle of the summer, you just wouldn't believe it. It just feels like, you know, we've just sort of got over the spring, doesn't it, really? So you've...
Yeah, it's cold for summer where I am.
How far are you up to then with the uploading on BitChute? Which episode are you up to?
Well, I think I explained before that I got about 12 episodes up originally, and then I couldn't get any more up, so I left it. And since the YouTube purge, turned back again to it. Somebody said it could have been because there were a lot from YouTube that particular week uploading. But I uploaded two parts that particular week, and as far as I can see, they still haven't sealed or got uploaded proper. So I'll try again later.
Yeah, there must be something going on there, because I think most people are moving over to BitChute. I think that's, you know, that's the solution.
I think YouTube was, you know, it's done enough around it, really. It disheartens video makers. Certainly sounds me.
Well, I can see it losing them a lot of money as well. And it's just going to be a benefit to BitChute. That's all it's going to do. It's going to be a great benefit to BitChute. I think, you know, the amount of people on there doubled. The amount of visitors, viewers that they had doubled within 24 hours of all these channels being taken off YouTube. So they're just going to lose that custom, and BitChute are going to gain all that custom. And people will move to BitChute, basically. YouTube have shot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, it has got some interesting videos on there. I have been watching it since the YouTube purge, kind of gave up with them on there. So, yeah, although I'm having problems uploading, the videos when I've been uploading are quite interesting.
Yeah, I remember seeing things like Zeitgeist on YouTube, and there was another thing around about the time the Lord of the Rings came out that was sort of exposing conspiracy stuff and the Illuminati, and Red Ice used to have a lot of stuff on there, and you know, it was great for finding all of this out. And nowadays, I mean, even InfoWars is banned there. And if you go to BitChute, it's not like it's full of extremist content. It just looks like YouTube did 5 years back. 6 years back.
Yeah. I mean, it must be boring for people to go on YouTube now just to get one narrative.
Yeah, well, it's all BBC, ITV, Sky, CNN. Even the search results put those channels at the front of the search results. So what's the point in having YouTube if it's just going to promote what's on the TV anyway? They've lost their very reason for existence in doing this and exposed.
It is Google, though. It is Google.
Yeah.
I don't have any
owned by them.
Any great love for Google.
Well, I think they've exposed themselves as just interested in censorship and keeping the status quo going. You know, it's quite open that who their loyalties are to. It's not to the people that actually made YouTube what it is. It's not to the creators, the people that, you know, like yourself, Dennis, that spent all that time making videos to upload. They got no loyalty to you. Their loyalty is to the people they were supposed to be in competition with. They were supposed to be in competition with Sky and ITV, and now they're doing what they're saying.
Though. I mean, I looked at the comments when I originally went on YouTube, and it was nothing like after The Greatest Story had gone up and a couple of others had gone up on YouTube. The comments then were kind of like, don't pull the wool over our eyes. We know the guy I'm knowing, all this. And I think they realised that the cat had been put out of the bag. Not enough in my eyes, but certainly enough to upset YouTube and for other people to read.
Well, there's no way they can go back. you know, they can't go back now that they've exposed themselves like this. We, as you say, we just move to another platform. There are other platforms. I suggest other people should set up their own websites as well, so that they've always got that backup there. People can always know where they're going to be able to find them, because they can't take down your own website. Well, not currently anyway. Unless you're something like the Daily Stormer. I mean, that might come about in a few years, but that would seem to be an option to me. I would say to people, set up your own websites. That's how it always used to be. It used to just be everyone had their own website and there'd be a blog roll on there. So if you found one website, you'd look at the blog roll and then you'd find all the others and you'd find all the specialist sites and they'd all be sort of linked together. And that was our community. And then people moved to social media and YouTube. And of course, now they're losing out after doing all this work. Suddenly the rug's being pulled from under them, and credit to everyone. I mean, nobody's given up. They're just starting again with new names. But if they thought to set these websites up first, then they would have had that backup there. So it really wouldn't have mattered.
Straight away, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've got backups, haven't you?
Yeah. What concerned me with the fact that in England, particularly, YouTube was saying that I had no content. And yet they were allowing me to remain up there for, bless like America to view. And I couldn't really understand why. And at one point, I were even considering knocking it off myself because it just seemed so weird. But they've done the favour for me now, so.
Well, again, that just exposed. That is what really annoys people, I think, is British people. They go on YouTube to find that if you're in Britain, you can't view something, but if you're in America and anywhere else in Europe, you can. I mean, how insulting is that? And infuriating. I mean, that's really going to infuriate you. I mean, I used to get annoyed at watching stuff on TV and thinking, oh, it's been censored. They've censored this movie. They made a big thing about they're going to show this movie on TV at last, and they've censored half of it. And it's that anger, I think, that people will have now.
There's one thing worse than that, I think. Well, it certainly annoyed me, and that was the shadow banning, where I could write, you know, quite a fair piece answering somebody, and then I find out, you know, if I go on another browser, I'm not there.
Yeah, shadow banning is a dirty trick, isn't it? You put all your work into doing something, you put it up, and nobody else can see it.
Exactly.
Well, they can still find our stuff. They can find our stuff at radioarian.com because we never set up using these social media platforms in the first place. And we're certainly not going to be censoring our content here. Now, tonight, Dennis, you've got this really, really interesting interview with Gudrun Himmler, Heinrich Himmler's daughter, that we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
Where did you come across this?
An old friend of mine who constantly sends me material. I have one or two people who sent me material, and this one came through. Sent me a couple, actually. Sent me the daughter of Hermann Göring as well. But this one in particular really struck me and surprised me how close I was to the truth, because she's talking virtually, practically, exactly the same as I went down that road in the Secret Masonic Victory. And I couldn't believe that I got so close.
So you hadn't, you hadn't really sort of come across her before? Had you heard of anything?
I hadn't any information from this at all. No, this is the first time I'd read it, which was only a couple of days ago, and I was stunned.
But apparently she, after the war, she survived the war, and she's continually spoken up and said, everything that people have been told about the war is a lie. And she's one of those few people that refused to go along with it and said, no, there weren't gas chambers. No, there wasn't a Holocaust. And the National Socialists were the good guys. And she kept that up for her whole life. I mean, this is a really noble, honourable, courageous woman here. And she does. The story she tells is much closer to what you've been showing on Freemasonic Victory than a lot of National Socialists will say about her father, Heinrich Himmler, as we'll see as we get into this. But this interview was, it took place in Munich in 1992, and Gudrun Himmler was Gudrun Berwitz by then. She was born on August the 8th, 1929, and died on May the 24th, 2018 at the symbolic age of 88. And she was 63 years old when she did this interview. And when you think, well, she was born in 1929. So she was a teenager, basically, when the war was on. So it's not like she was listening to her father and all the others when she was a toddler. She was a teenager. She was, you know, she was, she was biologically, she was an adult. So I think we can trust her memories. And being a teenager, she would have been very inquisitive and she would have picked up on things. She would have picked up on things that maybe the adults didn't want her to know about. So for people to say, well, she would have had all the bad things hidden from her. I don't think that were possible. I mean, these bad things we say weren't true, but even if they were, they wouldn't have been able to keep that hidden from an inquisitive young teenager that had access everywhere. I mean, she was walking around the work camps. She was involved in everything that her father was involved in at work. He took a very, very close interest in her. So she had access to just about everything. And her story is completely different. Yes, an interesting woman. Well, the first section that she talks about is the Jews, and she's been asked about Heinrich Himmler and what he thought about the Jews. And she says, "I heard him speak about how after the war, Jews would be released and resettled to either Palestine, Madagascar, or deep into Russia, where they came into Europe from several hundred years ago. Understanding who these people are is key to solving the problems that a nation has. They have distinct racial features like dark hair, hooked noses, big ears, and beady eyes. And while they may look European to a degree, they work to destroy what Europeans have built religiously and culturally. My father was a policeman. He had a deep sense of right and wrong and expected his men to follow the law in a uniform manner. He gave a speech which I attended where I heard him exalt and chastise his officers regarding not policing fairly." And I'll just stop there because we often forget that. I mean, he was a policeman and, you know, policemen joined the police to go after the bad guys and protect the good guys. And, you know, they take a lot of risks and he was at the head of this. So what she's saying here would be true. You know, he would have a deep sense of right and wrong. She heard him praising his officers, and she also saw him chastising them for not being fair.
Well, he left the Catholic Church as well because he didn't believe some things what was going on was right. So again, that doesn't surprise me
because he didn't think the church was acting fairly.
Yeah, that's right. You know, did. In his eyes, they kind of let the Jews dictate the Bible and get away with it.
Well, and she's also pointed out, you know, the plan was after the war to resettle the Jews in Palestine, Madagascar, or deep into Russia. So that was obviously talked about. That was quite open that was the plan. Continuing, she says, "Everyone had friends and everyone had the good Jew in which they were hesitant to enforce the removals to ghettos and work camps. He told them that the SD was uncovering so much espionage and illegal activity in even the good Jews that they must all be moved to where they could be better watched. Therefore, Germany, like many other nations, moved aliens who were deemed a threat to the war effort to areas where they could be concentrated together and watched. Nothing sinister, evil, or wrong with protecting your people and nation during times of war. You no doubt will bring up the photos next, which tie into the eyewitness stories. Many inmates died in these camps, but not because of a policy of killing or neglect." And that's an important point. I mean, it's still the same today. People say, well, what about Nathaniel Kapner? What about Henry Macker? What about these so-called good Jews? But there's always something, there's always something in the story that they miss, that they're covering up for. And why would you want to have Jews speaking up for us anyway? We have our own people that can speak up for us. Jews can look out for Jewish interests, which they're very good at doing. And we can look out for our interests. And it's interesting here that she was saying that what was happening, these people that others were saying, oh, well, these he's a good Jew, this one, even they were concerned with espionage and illegal activity because their loyalty is to other Jews.
Well, the thing is that, you know, when there's a war going on and you realise there is some of these so-called good Jews helping the Allies, there's no way that you can actually, you know, uproot them all. So the easiest way is just to collect them all together, and then that way, then you know that things aren't being leaked. I think that was the idea.
Well, yeah, so you can keep an eye on them. And as you were saying, that's just the same as every other nation did. If you have a...
Japan in America suffered, yeah, the American Japanese really suffered in some of the camps. The guards looked on them as rats and treated them so.
Well, you think in Britain, you know, if there had been any Germans in Britain at the time of the war, they would have been interned. The same as in Germany, they had Jews in Germany at the time of the war, so they were interned because the Jews were against them. They declared war against them, the economic boycott. They were massively involved in this, and a large portion of them were communist sympathisers. The Jews that...
They were the problem, yeah.
I mean, they had Michelin Jews as well, and the Michelin Jews mm-hmm. were, some of them were fighting in the war effort. You know, they were actually fighting on the side of the Germans. So it's not like it was all Jews. It was communist Jews, basically.
Yeah, partisans.
She says, one thing that seemed to pain my father was that the Allies bombed some of the camps, killing inmates. Because of the bombing of Europe, especially in the final months of the war, necessities that were needed in the camps could not get through, and many prisoners who came west were sick, and terrible outbreaks happened in a couple of the camps in which these prisoners were put in. Belsen was a prime example. I cannot state enough that there was no policy to kill innocent people simply because of racial ideas. There were many partisans and criminals who were killed, some in the camps and some after being rounded up, but this had nothing to do with exterminating a race. Father hated seeing death in wartime, but he was a policeman who knew his duty and knew what he asked of his officers was a hard duty. But when people break the laws of war and kill innocents, they too must be held accountable, and those who help them. So this was a point. The people that were killed were executed. They were executed for breaking the law, for being criminals, for being terrorists. It's like... when we were talking about that escape to victory with the British prisoners mm-hmm. of war, when they escaped, and when they report that today, they say, oh, and Hitler had them all murdered. Well, no, they were escaped prisoners of war. They were the enemy, and they had escaped from their prison. So the rules of law are they should be shot because they're a threat, because they're just going to get hold of a weapon and kill Germans.
I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, especially on Belsen as well, when Ernst Sundel interviewed a British medic who had never been asked for his opinion after the war. None of the newspapers approached him because he simply said it how it was, and he was talking away, and he was saying what probably happened was the propaganda was so bad that when the British did turn up, as they did, typhus had broken out and there were bodies all over the place. But it wasn't just that. They had these gangs of communists who kind of took all the food as well, which we spoke about. And he said he there was no gas chambers at Belsen, and he never heard of any others in any other place. So this all ties up again with this British medic.
So the communists that were in there, they were taking all the food that should have actually gone to the other prisoners.
Tough guys, yeah. I mean, these were, you know, out-and-out communist tough guys.
And you also had the bombing of the railroads. I mean, she's talking here in the final months of the war, and if all the if the communications are down, the roads have been bombed, the railways have been bombed, then you can't actually get any of the medical necessities, the food that you need, actually into the prisons. And there was one bit, I'm not sure if I actually took the quote there, and she was sort of joking and saying that the somebody that was actually in one of these camps was saying that they're better off in the camps than they are outside, because at least they are being fed. I mean, if you're thinking of the people that are living there on the outside, you know, they may not have been able to get food, they may not have been able to get medicine, but at least when you're in these camps, there was these regular deliveries, and there had to be enough that was delivered because there was enough for the officers and enough for the workers there. And the actual number of officers to workers was very, very small, she points out as well. And I don't know, there must have been some research done into that. Do you know anything about that, Dennis, about whether there was just, you know, just a few of the officers compared to the number of prisoners or workers that there were in the camps?
Well, I'm pretty sure that the officers were outnumbered by those in the camp. I think I was talking about a law that Hitler had brought out saying that if any of the camps prisoners escaped, to shoot them, to shoot everybody, because he didn't want them going into the nearest town and causing havoc. Well, apparently this did happen, and some did break away. He must have overpowered the guards, and they were arrested eventually by the Americans after they'd caused some real problems. But they were only sent back into the camp, but not really strictly watched. They were still regarded as enemies of the Nazis.
Oh, you'd have to make an example.
The Americans massacred at least 50 SS up against the wall, which we covered in Greater Story.
When you think about it, if you've got a prisoner of war camp and some of them escape, you're going to have to punish them so that the others don't do the same thing. Or if they attack a guard, say you've got one prison guard for every 10 prisoners, and a load of prisoners beat one of these guards up, they have to be really severely dealt with, because the whole lot could suddenly attack these guards, which and outnumber them 10 to 1.
Yeah, and there were young lads. I can remember a picture, again, in the Greatest Story, of a young lad alive 1 minute in his SS uniform, and then a couple of minutes later it shows him dead on the ground, battered. All his face is puffed out. You could still make him out, like a ginger hair. But yeah, certainly they were set on by these prisoners.
And of course you couldn't treat them that badly. Because of that as well, if you treat them badly, then they're likely to riot. And you have the same problem with the prisons today. What I like to compare is however many officers they have in a modern prison for however many prisoners, and compare it to how many officers they had in these work camps, to how mm-hmm. many workers. Because I bet that there's probably about 10 times less, I would say. Today,
I would say so, even though we're on demand in today's prisons.
Yeah, probably have something like one officer to every 10 prisoners, say, in the prisons today. And I would guess that they would probably have something like one officer to every 50 prisoners in these camps.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Relying on good behaviour, basically. Relying on treating them with, mm-hmm. with dignity, and expecting the officers to be treated with dignity as well. Well, the next person... she brings up is Reinhard Heydrich. This is really interesting. She says, there is a difference between National Socialism and German rule. You no doubt are referring to my father's good friend Reinhard Heydrich when you speak of Czechoslovakia. He was assassinated because he was so good to the people. It is a good study of the way the Allies twist history to their liking and use the Czechs as pawns. They were ruled by Germany and under occupation, which many did not like. But it had nothing to do with National Socialism. Heydrich brought National Socialist ideas to the people and vastly started to improve their lives during a war in which everyone had to sacrifice. And I'll just stop there, because that, we don't often think about that. Because of course they're going to resent the fact that they're being occupied by Germany, but the system, the National Socialist system, was seen as a good system and was of benefit. I mean, that's of benefit to everyone to have a National Socialist system. What do you know about Reinhard Heydrich, Dennis?
Another high-ranking Catholic. Was probably groomed to take over from Hitler at some point. Certainly, the right hand of Himmler. And he's been obviously demonized by the Allies. But we're just getting one side of a story. And this is another side of a story which I always felt was nearer the mark. But Czechoslovakia, again, was a difficult place, you've got to remember, because Germans were getting trouble early on. That's why Hitler kind of moved in for the Munich Agreement. So after the war, it was even worse. These so-called partisans or resistance, as we say. They seem to be all Jews, whether in France or Czechoslovakia, and you know, they're going to reap revenge then.
So the people that were actually under occupation, like the French, all the Czechs, they were sort of quite happy with the National Socialist ideas. And then you've got the Jews, who obviously aren't happy with the National Socialist ideas, and they form the core of the terrorist faction. So, of course, when the National Socialists go after the terrorists, you're getting a large percentage of Jews that are these terrorists. So, again, it's not going after people because they're Jewish, but going after them because they're a threat to the Germans.
Communist, yeah.
Yeah. She continues, he was assigned to govern an occupied people. But because he brought in a better standard for farmers and workers, the people were very receptive to his leadership. He came to be very liked and respected. My father wanted to model his style for all occupied areas to turn the people to our side. The English claim he was so evil and bad, a hangman sending thousands to their deaths. It was so bad, they claim, they had to train a kill team to go in and kill the murderer. The problem with his story is that if he was so bad to the people, the Allies would have loved it. It would have made the people ready to aid the Allies in any way. And instead, it took a vast underground Allied spy network of non-Czechs to get information as the people refused to help. And I had a look, I looked up the Wikipedia page on Reinhard Heydrich, and it is full of lots of, oh, what an evil person he is. But when he was attacked... When he was attacked, it was a Czech woman that brought aid to him and got him to the hospital, a Czech peasant woman. And if he was hated by the Czechs, she would have just left him there. She wouldn't have gone out of the way.
Quite brave as well, I believe, because I think he chased the people and eventually got killed there, but certainly wasn't afraid of going after him.
Yeah, instead of just racing off after they shot at him because they made a mistake, he stopped the car and tried to go after them, and I think they threw a grenade, and he was badly hit, and this peasant woman got him to the hospital, and then he sort of came around, and I think Hitler went to visit him or Himmler went to visit him, and then he said, well, you know, if this is the end, then this is the end. I mean, he was a courageous man. Right to the end. I'd like to learn more about Reinhard Heydrich, actually. He sounds like an interesting character.
It certainly does.
Only Czechs motivated by politics, mainly communists and Jews, were the resistance. So that sounds like France, doesn't it? During the funeral for Heydrich... Only they were actually not even in France. French resistance were in Britain. During the funeral for Heydrich, thousands upon thousands of Czechs turned out to bid him farewell. The real reason he was killed was that he was just so good. The English then spread disinformation to us, saying it was Czech partisans rising up with help from the people. Those in charge fell for that claim and came down harshly on people, even if just by rumour, something Heydrich would have been against, as he would have wanted hard evidence. Now, that may be referring to something I read in Wikipedia. Now, I don't know if this is true or not. It says that they traced... Or they thought they got where the origins of this assassin was, and it was these two villages, and they just wiped out everyone in those villages. And what she seems to be saying here is that he wouldn't have wanted that. He would have wanted hard evidence before going after anyone. Yeah. So a noble man. France was the same way. She says France was the same way. The people were treated very well. Only the diehard communists formed a resistance, which the average French person wanted no part of. My father was proud of the French, who sent many people to help us, either in the factories or at the front. So yes, there were those opposed to German rule, but many more were receptive to the ideas of National Socialism and saw a future that was very bright for all Europeans. It is too bad we were not given the luxury of being able to unoccupy these people and turn them over to true National Socialist leaders. The war made the occupation necessary to secure our borders from enemy invasion. So that's, you know, they're telling us about this plan that they had for after the war, and it would have been a liberated Europe, liberated from the banks and National Socialist. And the other bit here I find interesting, she says about how the French sent many people to help them, either in the factories or at the front. And in the First World War, there were people from Belgium, and the propaganda reports say, oh, these Belgian people, the Germans locked them up as prisoners. But they didn't. They actually volunteered. And a lot of them were volunteering to work in the factories, which were in these camps, and they were actually being paid. So where it says there, you know, these factories, most of the sort of factory areas, like in Auschwitz, they were actually in the work camps. So there might well have been people mm-hmm. that actually come over to work in these factories that we're told, oh, it was slave labor, but the French were actually, you know, moving to Germany so that they could help with the war effort.
Yeah, there was quite a lot of hatred after the war as well from the resistance. There's a case of, you know, one American soldier was talking in one. I read another interview, and he said he saw a crowd turning on these women, and he says there was a one particular woman, very beautiful, like knocked to the floor and kicked to death, and he had to turn away. And they were told not to interfere as an American. So a lot of revenge going on, as again I tried to show in The Great Story.
Oh, I think when the Germans came in and they liberated places like Lithuania and Latvia, I think most of the communists had left by then. But because I guess some of them were still there, then yeah, they took their vengeance after what the communists yep. had done to them. And the same once the communists came back, they obviously took their revenge.
Yeah,
again. Like a vicious cycle. Well, the next bit is Christianity and the Church. It's a very interesting bit. She says, this is somewhat hard to explain to someone who is not German, but I will try. My father had a vision of a people turning back to their creator, who gave us everything we know. Our people, the Europeans, have created all the great civilizations, have set foot on every continent, and have brought great good to the whole world. We are leaps and bounds ahead of any other peoples, including the advanced Orientals. My father asked the questions as to why, where, and how. He commissioned the studies of our history to trace the footsteps of our ancestors. Where did they originate, and why were they so intelligent and advanced when other races stayed the same? And of course, this is what we talk about, the fact that Europeans haven't always been in Europe. You know, that's why we don't call them Europeans. We call them white people or Aryans, because just the word European limits things. It says, well, these people have only ever lived in Europe. They're from Europe. And we came from the East. We came from the warmer areas, which is where all the civilizations began. Obviously, all began by white people, but it's all brown people that live there now. And that's why they live among the ruins of the civilization. Because that's what happens when you miscegenate. You lose that spark that you have as a white man. So that was Himmler's idea. And she says, Germany had some of the most advanced anthropologists, genetic scientists, historians, and supporting staff to help find the answers as to why we exist and how it all came to be. My father was religious and raised us to be also. A being is responsible for life. That is very easy to see because of what it is, nature and the beauty of the earth. Nature is clear about that. The problem or question is who he is. Every race was given a way to worship their creator. The European people found a God who worked well for us for 2,000 years. My father's concern was that in just the last 200 years, Jews have wormed their way into our religion, even to the point of working on translating parts of the Bible to suit their needs. So that confirms that he was a Christian, and what he was against was the way that the church was over the last 200 years and what the Jews had done.
Yeah, many people believe he was pagan. They've all been told he was pagan.
Well, that's nonsense. I mean, who are you going to believe, the Allies, or are you going to believe his daughter?
And me. Right.
Yeah. Well, you've dug this out without actually, you know, hearing about this interview.
Quotes. Yeah. He quotes about Jesus. Another tells the SS, you know, that you can't criticize Christ.
Even working on translating parts of the Bible to suit their needs. And, of course, we talked about that a couple of episodes back, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's only the last couple of hundred years, like she says.
She says they were then able to convince leaders that the Bible is really about the Jew and not about Europeans. We are only secondary, along with all the other Gentiles. It's got Gentiles in quote marks. This made no sense to my father, as Jews do not have any of the marks of a creative, industrious people. I have met people from your country who agree that the Jews cannot be the people of the Bible, or that the Bible is only for the Jew, who denounce and hate Christ. We Europeans took his name, hence every European nation is a Christian nation. My father did not hate the church or persecute the church. What he disagreed with was the Judeo influence on the church. Germany had some sects who worshipped the Jew as the only people close to God. And I think that makes it clear that she saw the Bible as a European book, and Christianity mm-hmm. as totally European, not Jewish at all. This idea that it was Jewish has only come about in the last 200 years.
Yeah, so when these pagans say, you know, we're cooks to the Jews, then it's ridiculous.
And also that this is the way that Himmler felt. You know, he didn't hate the church.
The great pagan, yeah.
Yeah, it disagreed with the Jewish influence. Well, this is what I say, you know, we've got a Jewish influence in politics, but we don't say, well, let's get rid of government, let's get rid of parliament, we'll have to find something new. So why do we say, well, let's get rid of, we've got Jews involved in Christianity, so why do we say, well, let's get rid of Christianity? You know, it doesn't make sense. They're involved in everything, and what we have to do is remove their influence from everything. It doesn't mean, you know, you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater too, which is what saying get rid of Christianity basically is. She says, right. The SS idea was to turn our people back to their roots from where they came and away from the modern Judeo church, who was seen as a destructive Trojan horse to weaken the people and turn them from their God. And that's just it, isn't it? The Antichrist say that's what Christianity is. But sensible people that have looked into this understand that it's just this modern church that's become that, and it always served us well before then. And that was the way that Himmler saw it. It's the modern Judeo church, which is the destructive Trojan horse. The German Christians were a good start, and my father attended many services by pastors who understood the Jewish influence on the Christian religion was not a good thing and led to false teachings. Therefore, my father respected the church. Many SS officers were Catholic, and he had no wish to anger Christians. He did, however, want people to see another side of the church that was not healthy for the people. It became lazy, drenched in liberal thought, even suggesting homosexuals should be allowed in society, and that race does not matter to the creator who created the races. Germans have always revered our history. You will see in our very old cathedrals images from our Germanic past, the gods our ancestors prayed to, and it is all tied into our modern worldview of religion. We worship God by thanking him for our history and honouring our ancestors who brought us forward into the age we are in. And I think that explains it, because the pagan types will say, well, I had all this pagan imagery. Well, they were using these runes. Well, they were talking about Odin and what have you. Well, the cathedrals have got images of Odin in them and the crows and the green man, and because there are cathedrals, so they reflect our culture. Christianity absorbed all of that. So when the National Socialists were using this imagery, it's out of respect for their past. It's not saying, well, we want to get rid of Christianity and go back.
And go back.
Yeah. Go backwards. You know, go back to being children again.
Exactly.
You know, it's like wanting to go back to primary school again after you've been through secondary school and university and saying, well, no, we're just going to go back to being primary school level of education again. It, you know, our religious ideas are continually evolving. And I think the problem is people think that Christianity was somehow alien and was brought in by foreigners, and that all comes from this idea that it comes from Jews.
Exactly.
Totally false. She's quite a good woman, this Gudrun. I mean, I do wonder mm-hmm. if, you know, maybe these are her ideas, but if they were her ideas, then why would she be saying that, you know, this is what her father thought? Because she's a woman of her own right. She could say, well, you know, these are my ideas. He thought slightly different, but she's not. She's saying these are his ideas.
Correct.
An important point. And then she talks about the Arnenerby and Wevelsburg Castle. She says the Arnenerby, supposedly, the Arnenerby was nothing but an archaeological research institute run by the SS. They went all over the world looking into the history of the Europeans and looking for evidence of the paths the tribes took coming into Europe. They found evidence of European, who can also be called Aryan, mummies in Tibet and China, Iran, and all over what we call Persia or the Middle East. They tested Egyptian theories and found most of all the dynasties were European bloodlines and not African. Some went to South America looking for evidence of Europeans there, as well as in America. They believed Columbus was not the first European on the continent, and indeed the Vikings may not have been the first either. There was evidence uncovered that tribes of Europeans were there thousands of years ago. The Arnenerby studied all aspects and theories of creation and evolution, the origin of races, and traced the paths of the early Aryans who went on to form the 12 main tribes of the European nations. They had compatriots all over the world, in every nation. I met some from Scotland and America who were very interested in the work Dr. Jordan headed. Nothing sinister about looking into your past to see about improving your future. So they found the evidence of all of this. Tibet, China, mm-hmm. Iran, Persia, Middle East, and they found evidence of the original people there being Aryan.
Which has been subdued again.
Yeah, they tried to hide today. And I think where she's saying they're, you know, white people in America before the Vikings, I think that was probably the Phoenicians. There's talk of the Phoenicians having open cast having mines over there in America. There's evidence of them and Phoenician writing in parts of America. So they could have been there, mm-hmm. you know, 500 years before the Vikings. But we're just told, oh, it was Christopher Columbus and maybe the Vikings. But I think those the Aztecs and the Incas, and there's evidence that there were white people there before them as well. Some of the statues, and also when they found some of these tribes, they had like red hair and blue eyes. Obviously, they were mixed race peoples, but they were still showing these traces of the white people that had been there originally.
And I think churches were down in South America as well. There's been some evidence of them migrating.
Could well be. And then you got the Solutrians as well. You know, I think they're from thousands of years back, and they've got the same arrowheads as the early tribes in France had, sort of just after the Ice Age. Whether or not they're white, I don't know. They say it was about 10,000 years ago, but it was the same people that were in France that were also in America. So
I think the problem is that this current regime, shall we say, is out to destroy history. We're talking not long back about in Sweden, they were destroying some Viking relics. You know, they don't want us to know about our ancestry or our history, because obviously they've got something to hide. And if you don't know your history, you know, you think like an animal and just look for your next round of food.
Yeah, if people realised that originally all these places in the world, they started out white, then, you know, they'd be making a fuss about all these peoples coming into our homelands now, because they realise that it's history repeating itself, and they'd see what the effect of it is. You know, the end result of multiculturalism is basically India, Egypt, Syria, Iraq.
Yeah.
That's how it ends up. Those places today living among the ruins of a previous civilization. And then she's asked about Wevelsburg. She says, I was around many, if not all, of the high leaders of the SS. So you could say I know more about the organization my father founded than most. There was nothing sinister about any of these organizations. Wevelsburg was nothing but a retreat and research center for SS men. They were to be the new vanguard, of a genetic repopulation of Germany to make up for the losses of the First War and its aftermath. The Jews promoted a genetic cesspool where everyone was encouraged to breed, no matter if you had a defect or not. But healthy women were also encouraged to abort their healthy babies. This was their way to weaken a nation's gene pool and kill off the best of the best, making their conquest easier. The blood and soil concept was a back to the roots of our ancestors' idea. It was in this that our gene pool would be repaired. Wevelsburg was set up so an SS member could study all about our history, our genetic makeup that makes us who we are, and how to preserve it. It was to be a place of honour for high SS leaders, so that future generations could honour the sacrifices they made to bring us a better world through National Socialism. So it wasn't some black magic palace for having pagan rites in.
That was a good excuse for the libraries and things there, though.
Didn't they have replicas of some of the relics there?
Himmler did, yeah. They even had a chapel. The Allies removed the chapel.
And that image of the black sun, you know, that I think that's representative of Christ. He's the light.
Well, it's not even black, it's green.
It's green. And it's just the symbol of it. You know,
I think it represents the Last Supper, 12 people at the Last Supper, I believe.
You can fit in with it as well. But it's like the reversal of light. You know, halos that when they draw saints and the icons and they have like a yellow halo around their head, that should be a black sun. I think, because it's not a material light that's coming out of their heads. It's a spiritual light that you can't see. That is, it's where the material light comes from, if you were. Like the sun itself is a shadow of the spiritual sun, the black sun. Everything that we see is a shadow of the real spiritual existence, which is in eternity. And where we live is mortal. I think it symbolizes all of that. And there's even a verse in, I think it's 2 Timothy, where it says that Christ is the light that no man has ever seen. And then it talks about there is no material sun in the afterlife. There is a light that comes from somewhere, and it's obviously a light that we can't see, but it's the light that gives us life, because you know, you can have a dead body and you can put the sun on it. It's not going to bring that body back to life. It's not the material sun that gives us life. It's God that gives us life. And if you put up just a material sun, the temptation is for people to see it as that, rather than see that as representative of God. So if you have a black sun, it's not something that already exists, so it can't be sort of idolized. And I think it's a fantastic symbol for God. Just that people get mixed up because they don't actually see past the most obvious thing. And with any of these symbols, they've all got esoteric concepts behind them, not, you know, sort of the most obvious thing.
Well, notice recently there's been another push with science, you know, where they're saying that the universe, there was definitely a Big Bang, which was once a theory. Now it's taught in schools as reality. Seems to be a push again. Certainly on YouTube, I was watching videos a while back, and some scientists were obviously convinced of what they were talking about. But what that was once, like I say, once just a thought. Now it's a fact in schools.
And who was it that flicked the switch for the Big Bang to happen?
Well, nothing can't create anything. Nothing is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? That's the thing.
Someone has got to create it. Yeah,
something can't come out of nothing, and all the scientific theories of evolution, Big Bang, it's all something out of nothing. So it fails.
Well, it's the first time in history that an explosion has created life with their way of explaining things.
Yeah, that's sort of quite the opposite of what you expect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Usually death and carnage. Well, it's like mutations when they say, well, cells mutate and they evolve. Well, the only mutations we know of are cancer. They're not anything positive. You don't suddenly mutate wings and become an angel that can fly. You end up with bowel cancer, you know, or breast cancer or something. That's what happens when your cells start mutating. You don't gradually evolve into something else. You know, all of their theories, when you actually think about them, they go against what you actually see in nature. And yet they've managed to convince everyone they're true, because it's all temptation to believe them. So the weight is on their side, because it's temptation to get you to believe something that's wrong. You know, the people are tempted to believe it because we live in this corrupted world. You know, as Christ told us, or the devil told us, he owns all the kingdoms in the world, and Christ didn't challenge him on that. You know, the devil does run everything in this world, in this material world. That's why he's here. That's who kicked out of heaven. So he's here in earth with us, along with his angels. So, of course, he has the power here. So lies will have a lot of power, but you can see through them.
Well, I was watching Joe Rogan on YouTube again, and he was saying about Christ that he's just a dead cult leader, a leader. Obviously, he's a Freemason, so he will say that. But he also pushes this agenda as well. Is, you know, just working for the obvious people.
So many of them do. They claim to be, you know, fighting against the New World Order or whatever, and then they subscribe to New Age religions. Or exactly. They subscribe to, you know, pagan gods. And all these Masonic places have got pagan gods outside them. You know, the EU itself has got pagan gods outside of it. And you've got these people, you know, claiming to be against them that worship this stuff. Well, you know, maybe these pagan gods don't want them worshipping, because it's the people like the EU and the Freemasons that get all the blessings from them for worshipping them. And the nationalists that claim to be worshipping the pagans, they don't get any blessings from them. Yeah, you
know, exactly.
And you get with our traditions and get with Christianity. Well, the last question here was about Himmler committing suicide. She said, no. I heard enough evidence by speaking with my father's friends and those who were with him until the end. He had so much knowledge of the war, what started it, how it was fought, dirt on heads of state, and most of all, the work with the Jews to help remove inmates from overcrowded camps. This does not fit with the Allied version of extermination of the Jews, because he knew so much and could disprove all Allied claims against Germany and the Führer. He was killed on Churchill's orders, I believe, to keep him from talking. My father was not like his friend Dr. Goebbels, who believed we could work with the Allies after the war to combat communism and had nothing to fear. He told my mother to stay at our home and to advise any Allied soldier we were the family of Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler, and we would be safe. So he had a bit of a rose-tinted view of the Allies here, I think, Dennis.
They got it wrong, yeah.
Were you aware of that?
Really wrong.
You were aware of that before, that he felt
that
way?
Yeah, I think David Irving went into great detail about the killing of Himmler. He believes that he actually saw the death mask, which was taken of Himmler, and it looked like someone had been badly beaten up. So he was convinced that he was murdered.
And also, didn't Hitler turn against Himmler for trying to make peace?
Yeah, he did, and with the Luftwaffe.
Goering.
Goering, that's right. But again, like I said, I'd also read Goering's daughter's interview, and she kind of claimed that there was a lot of misunderstanding going around then with all the bombing, and Hitler was isolated and wasn't exactly how it's been portrayed. That's what she said.
Well, Gudrun continues. She says, Dr. Goebbels killed his family because he believed they would end up like Mussolini and his children would be raped and mistreated by Soviet soldiers and Jews. My father had no worries like that for us. He believed the Western Allies were good and would come to their senses as to the danger in the East. He was wrong in this, and our captors mistreated us. They withheld food and water, hygiene items, groped my mother and me, threatened us with rape, and said I would be sent to Russia. So Goebbels was right, wasn't he?
Yeah, Himmler wasn't the only one, of course, because like we know down in the Balkans how they struggled to surrender to the Allies in the West rather than the communists, and then they were sent straight back again. So, you know, there was kind of a myth that if you surrendered to the Americans or the British, you'd be safe. and it turned out to be what it was, a myth.
And she was lucky to survive, really. I think she was lucky to survive. And I'm not so certain that maybe it was because of what Magda Goebbels did. It may have actually helped Gudrun to survive, because the Allies would have wanted to portray Magda Goebbels as doing that unnecessarily, and evil for doing it. So therefore, if they didn't harm the children of Himmler, then they could then portray Magda Goebbels as being really evil and having done this, unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Whereas I think she did have, a good reason to be scared of what would happen after what happened with Mussolini, and obviously the mistreatment to everybody else. She says, "I have had people reach out to the men who claimed they buried my father to see if they can lead us to his grave. They are typical English, where they believe him to be their enemy and a very bad man, and they have no desire to help. This shows how powerful the propaganda is. They become heartless because they believe they are saving the world from evil. They have no idea that they were the evil ones fighting an evil war against an innocent nation and its people." And that's the problem, isn't it? I've been saying this for a while.
Still strong today.
Yeah, our virtue gets used against us. Our good nature gets used against us, and we get deceived into thinking that we're standing up for what's right, and in actual fact, we're standing up for what's wrong. You know, these people that call for open borders and rescuing the refugees, that's because we don't want to see people dying, we don't want to see people ill or what have you. But that should be only for our own people. If you extend that to others, then it then becomes a threat to our own people, and they're damaging us by doing that. And each one of them that comes into Europe is displacing one of us. And it's the same.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think with when you said that they're trying to turn Europe into what they did with the cities and nations down in the Middle East. I think that's exactly what they're trying to do. They've done it before. They know how to do it, and they know how to get away with it. And at the moment, they're succeeding.
Well, it's the same people, isn't it? I think whatever names they go by, it's always been the same people. It's always been these bankers and these people at the top and these merchants that haven't actually been a part of the nation that they're living among, that seek to subvert that nation and corrupt them, and if they can get them to interbreed and become mixed race like them, and eventually turn the whole world mixed race, and that is out of a hatred of God. It's out of an absolute hatred of God, the Creator.
Yes, you're right.
And that's the way they can get their own back on God, isn't it? Is by permanently destroying His creation. So that,
the problem is the churches don't. If they do realize, they don't mention it. You know, they kind of go along with everything as was said for the last couple of hundred years, and it's not going to do Europe any good, because if they're going to hide these lies and agendas, it's only going to lead to the destruction of the white race.
Well, it's like she said earlier. God is the author of race. God is the creator of race, and yet the churches today are promoting the destruction of God's creation by interbreeding. Yeah. I mean, that law at the beginning in Genesis, it says kind after kind, and it says kind after kind about 10 times. It doesn't say kind out of kind. I mean, that's what we have now. They have made kinds out of the kinds that God created. And these kinds that have been made out of those kinds, they're a corruption of God's creation. They weren't created by God in that image. They've been recreated in man's image, which is, God can't be held responsible for that. That's temptation of the devil to break the laws of nature and corrupt his creation. And once that's done, there's nothing that can be done about it. It's got to be the most evil, most wicked thing that's ever been done in the history of the world. Is the blending of the races to create new kinds out of the kinds that God created. And we have to be thankful that you know, we're still here and we're still created in the image of God. And that there's fewer and fewer
for
of
now,
us.
Yeah.
But we are still here. And we'll be here next Friday as well with more Truthful Out Radio. Dennis, thank you very much for coming on today.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great summer weekend ahead of you.